The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2019 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2019. You may make additional copies of this recording for use by your school, but please do not sell any copies of the recording. Learn more about classical Christian education and the ACCS at classicalchristian.org.
All right, well, good morning, everybody. My name is Richard Haller, and I'm the headmaster at Providence Classical School in Spring, Texas. It's my honor to be here. Before we get started, let me gauge the audience a little bit and just see who we have out here. How many board members do we have here? Okay. And how many heads of school? Okay. Other admin? Okay. Faculty members? Faculty staff? And then last but not least, that's right, headmaster and faculty. And last but not least, how many millionaires that want to give to a classical school in Spring, Texas? Yeah, thought it'd be worth a shot. All right. Well, this topic is about what happens in the hall versus what's on the wall. And let me explain that title for a minute. Several years ago, I was at a pastor's conference, and Andy Stanley was one of the speakers there, and he mentioned really two things that I'll refer to today that really stuck with me throughout these years of ministry. One was, as he was talking to the pastors, he was saying, listen, what your mission statement as a church, you may have a mission statement that's up on your wall, but what happens in the halls of your church is much, much more important than any mission statement that's up on the wall. And that has stuck with me all these years. So I thought, since I was up against George Grant this morning, that I needed to come up with something catchy. So I borrowed Andy Stanley's terminology and talked about what's happening in your hallways of your school versus, and hopefully it's not versus, but the reality that it can be versus what's really on the wall in your mission statement. So the year was July. It was July of 1961, and Vince Lombardi was meeting with 38 players of the Green Bay Packers. It was an opening day of training camp, and Lombardi had a significant task in front of him. The Green Bay Packers had just lost a devastating NFL national championship the year before to the Philadelphia Eagles. Having had the lead in the fourth quarter, they gave up the lead, and then having driven all the way down to the 10-yard line, time ran out, and they lost the NFL championship. So on day one of the training camp, Vince Lombardi did this. He took nothing for granted. This is what David Moranis says in his book, When Pride Still Mattered, A Life of Vince Lombardi. He said he took nothing for granted. He began a tradition of starting from scratch, assuming that the players were blank slates who carried over no knowledge from the year before. It's a great way to think about it as you're preparing for your next school year. He began with the most elemental statement of all. He said, gentlemen, while holding a pigskin in his right hand, this is a football. And throughout the training camp, what Lombardi did was go back to the basics. Let's start from scratch. Let's focus on what football is. How do you block? How do you tackle? Let's start with page one in the player's handbook, in the playbook. And they went throughout the year focusing on fundamentals. That year in the NFL championship, they demolished the New York Giants. I think it was 37-0. That was the beginning of the reign of Vince Lombardi and his success as an NFL coach. He went on to win five NFL championships in the next 7 years. Never coached a team with a losing record. It's not just football. John Wooden did the same for basketball. In fact, Phil Jackson is said to do the same in basketball as well. Well, why am I talking about the fundamentals? Because in education, in a school, your mission statement is the fundamental. It's it. This is what those of you that were in the leadership conference yesterday with Chick-fil-A, this is what they were getting after as well. The why is more important than the what. Simon Sinek, in his golden circle theory, that says the same thing. Before we talk about the what we do and what we provide, what services we provide as educators, we have to start with the why. Why do we do what we do? This is what's critical. ISM, for those of you that are familiar with ISM, Independent School Management, they have all these principles and get after best practices of how independent schools run their schools. All of their best practices are focused around three core performance outcomes. The first is your mission statement. Second is your portrait of your ideal graduate. What is it that you want your graduate to look like when they come out of your school? And then third, what are your characteristics of professional excellence? If the why is your mission statement, the what is what you want your graduate to look like, the how would be the faculty and staff and your employees that are going to accomplish it. What are the characteristics that are needed of those to accomplish your mission? So as we start in this session, you know, this is a mission statement. That's what we were going to get after. The fundamentals, one of the fundamentals at least, of school administration. So when I first graduated from seminary, I picked up a book by Aubrey Mauffers called Ministry Nuts and Bolts. And I loved the subtitle. The subtitle was What They Don't Teach You in Seminary. All right, so he was a prof at the seminary I graduated at. And then he had this book, Ministry Nuts and Bolts, What We Don't Teach You After You've Just Given Us All This Money to Graduate from Our Institution. But that book has some key principles that's helped shape the way that I think about leading a ministry. And in that book, he talks about core values and mission. And one of the things that he talks about is you can have a core value or you can have a mission statement that's actual or you can have one that's aspirational. If it's actual, it's when the school community owns and practices that mission on a daily basis. If it's aspirational, it could be great that you aspire to this as a mission. It could be great that this is what you aspire to be. But if the community doesn't own it, if they're not practicing it, it's not really your actual mission statement. It's really just an aspirational mission statement of what you hope to become in the future. I was walking in the streets here in Atlanta and noticed that there were Wells Fargo buildings in the area. And Wells Fargo, I'm assuming this is one of the corporate offices, and hope nobody's from Wells Fargo here. But Wells Fargo, in their mission statement, proudly boasts of valuing what's right for our customers. Or they value what's right for our customers in everything that we do. And then in March 2017, their federal regulator, the U.S. Comptroller of Currency, published its evaluation of Wells Fargo. This is what he wrote and found. An extensive and pervasive pattern and practice of discriminatory and illegal credit practices across multiple lines of business within the bank, resulting, catch this, in a significant harm to large numbers of consumers. So here is a mission statement that says we value what's right for our customers in everything that we do, but then their own federal regulator says, you know, you have practices that are hurting your consumers. It's one thing to be aspirational, to want this to be the case. It's another thing for it to be actual. And one other point that as we talk about this that I think it's important to think about is, consider times of transition. As you're thinking about your mission statement, if you're a new head of school, maybe this is an area where it's still an aspirational aspect. Or if you've just created, if you're the board and you've just created a mission statement, because I don't want to assume that everybody actually has a mission statement. If you just created one, just recognize the fact that during times of transition, there is a real reality that it's often aspirational and not actual yet. That's okay. You just have to recognize and you have to put some principles in practice to make sure that it becomes actual. So let's talk about your mission statement and what makes a good mission statement. Your mission statement explains why your school exists. Again, people, great organizations, don't exist because of their product. They continue to thrive because of their purpose. As an organization, because of why they exist. In fact, this is what Sinek calls working from the inside out. And those that were at the Chick-fil-A leadership conference yesterday, that's what they were focusing in on as well. Why is it that Chick-fil-A succeeds? Because they start with the why, and then they work from the inside, and then they work their way out. Your mission statement explains why you exist. Why are you in existence as a school? Why do you want people to come send their kids to you? It's that which distinguishes your school from others. So in every school preview that we do, in every open house, this is how I start. I start everyone this way, with the question of what distinguishes our school from other schools. And by that, what I'm not trying to get after is I'm not trying to say what makes our school better than the school down the street from us. We're not trying to be in a competition with other Christian schools or other schools in the area. That's not the point. But what is it that distinguishes us? What makes us different? And what I always tell the people that come out is it's our mission, it's our vision. That we are a group of people, a community that has gathered around a specific mission and a specific vision. That's what distinguishes us. And in classical Christian schools, that is what distinguishes us. And yes, that may make us have a better what we do may be better than other schools, but that's not the point. It's really after what is it, why is it that we do what we do? Now, when you're creating a mission statement, it's not comprehensive, but it is value-laden. It has to be broad. It has to be clear. If you want to think about your mission statement, if you're wondering whether or not it's clear, take it and pass it through the people test. Gather various people within your community. Grab some parents. Grab some teachers. Grab some students. And say, what does this mission statement mean? And if it's vague, then you may need to retweak your mission statement. You may need to work at it. It's got to be comprehensive, value-laden, that's driven in on what you value, broad enough to cover what you do and why you exist, but also clear. It serves as a guiding statement for what you do. Your mission statement really guides what you do day in and day out. It determines where you spend your money. I remember when I was in seminary, I was working at a furniture store owned by a Christian, and became part of his leadership team, and we created a mission statement for that organization. And then, you know, we're a team committed to serve with integrity and generosity. And that little thought process that was running through us, every decision I made when a customer came complaining to me was run through this grid. Having a mission statement helps you do that. When you're faced with a question, do I add this class or do we do this or do we do this? You run it through your mission statement. Run it through your core values. It's a guiding statement for what you do. It needs to be short enough that your community can internalize it. It wants to become an internal mantra. It's got to be short enough. And in fact, I'd say it's got to be memorable and marketable. If you're going to accomplish, if you're going to fulfill your mission, your whole community needs to own it. It's not enough for the head of school or for the board to own it. Everybody's got to own it. I like to dream big. I want to have extreme high goals. But if we're going to have a big vision, then in order for us to accomplish that vision, everybody's got to be a part of it. Everybody's got to own it. That's got to be your board. It's got to be your administration. It's got to be your faculty and your staff. And it's got to be your parents and your students as well. I was talking to Tom Spencer yesterday, and I said, thanks, Tom, for putting me up against George Grant. And I also said, Tom, I said so much of what I want to say Chick-fil-A mentioned yesterday. And he said, that's great. That's good confirmation. He said, but this is why I asked you to speak on this. When we visited your school for your accreditation renewal, everybody in your community knew your mission. Every student we asked knew it with clarity. They owned it. They knew it. Your faculty knew it. We didn't have to ask them, hey, you know, they didn't have to go look it up in their binder what their mission statement was. They knew it. And part of the reason why they knew it was because it's memorable and it's marketable. One last point before we move on to here is that when we think about our mission statement, it's got to be rooted in the Great Commission, at least for me, right? If as believers, we've got to be about following through on God's commands for us. Christ's command was to fulfill the Great Commission, to make disciples. So as I think about why I get passionate about our mission, because our mission is rooted in fulfilling what God's called us to do. I mean, think about this for a minute. God's plan for discipleship, for changing people's lives, are you. His plan is you. His plan is me. It's us. And as a school, we get to live out and fulfill a mission, fulfill the Great Commission by aligning our mission with what God is calling us to do. So let me put up a sample and ask you this question. What's wrong with this mission statement? First of all, look how long it is, right? I left the school's name out. I took this right off the internet. Blank School seeks to create a challenging learning environment that encourages high expectations for success through development appropriate instruction that allows for individual differences in learning styles. Our school promotes a safe, orderly, caring, and supportive environment. Each student's self-esteem is fostered by positive relationships with students and staff. We strive to have our parents, teachers, and community members actively involved in our students' learning. Wow. Right? Not memorable. Not marketable. Maybe a little bit clear. I mean, they're broad. I mean, they're really getting into what they're about. But, not really rooted in the Great Commission. But I didn't expect it to be. It's not a Christian school. But that's not going to cut it. Nobody's going to remember that. So here's ours. It's not it's not what I created. It's what our founders created. It's a good mission statement. I might change a word or two if I were starting from scratch, but I love the mission statement. It's a great one. Providence Classical School is a Christian school, using the classical model to train students to impact their culture for Christ. Short. ISM says, keep it under 30 words. I think Chick-fil-A's is right at about 30 words. I've seen a lot of marketable, memorable ones that are about 20, 21 words, and that's kind of where I push for it. I've heard others say try to keep your mission statement at 12 words. I think 20 is kind of where my sweet spot is, right? But what does this mission statement do for us? It's value-laden. It enables me that when I'm in any situation, I'm able to highlight several key points. We're Christian. And I can go into that. What does it mean to be Christian? It's not just that we have a Bible class. It's not just that we have a chapel. It's that in everything that we do, we're trying to be Christ-centered. We're not a perfect school. I'll tell our people all that all the time. We're not perfect. Just because we're Christian doesn't mean sin doesn't exist on our campus. What it does mean is that we get to bring the gospel to our sin. We get to bring the gospel when there's conflict. And we use the classical model. So we get to unpack that. What does it look like? What does classical mean? Again, broad. You can't go into all the details in your mission statement. For what purpose? This is the why. We use the classical model to train students. To train students to impact their culture for Christ. So that in all that we do, that's what we're constantly getting at. This is what our teachers can constantly think through, what we're constantly reminding our faculty, our staff of. When our students meet, I'm constantly telling them, this is why we exist. This is why what we're attempting to do to you. I transitioned from the upper school principal to the head of school 2 years ago. And as I was thinking through that summer of how I was going to lead, I decided that I needed to focus on our mission and on our vision, our ideal graduate. So everything that I started doing, I was pushing this nonstop. Constantly talking about our vision, our mission and our vision. Our students had, if you asked any of our students, what's our mission, they would say to impact the culture for Christ. And I said, that's part of our mission. Certainly that's part of it, but that's not everything. So I started unpacking it. What is our mission? And talking about Christian, talking about classical, we're talking about training, all of those issues. So then what's the relationship between your mission and your vision? Well, I think that your vision, at least this is the way that I look at it, your vision attempts to take your mission and paint a picture of what that looks like fulfilled. So if this is a mission statement, a statement that's up on the wall, that's not good. I messed up there. There we go. Okay. If a mission statement is what's up on your wall, this is your purpose, then your mission tries to add some flesh to it. It tries to paint a picture to others that if we fulfill this mission, this is what it will look like. And I think in a school, ideally, this becomes your ideal graduate. Again, for those of you that are familiar with ISM, those of you that aren't, I do recommend it. They're not a specifically Christian school, but they have a whole host of Christian schools that use their principles. Their goal is to help you fulfill your mission, and they focus on best practices. They have the process of how do you create an ideal graduate? How do you create a statement? This drives what we are. This is what it looks like fulfilled for us. So in other words, what is it that we want our mission to look like when our graduates step out of our school? If we think about Chuck Evans and Little John's book, Wisdom and Eloquence, one of the things that I love about the book is they talk about approaching your curriculum from a 12 to K approach. Instead of starting in K and working your way to 12, what's the end goal? What do you want your students to know by the time they come out of 12th grade? And then work your way backward to kindergarten. Well, when you have an ideal graduate, a portrait of an ideal graduate, you get to say, this is what our goal is for them to look like by the time they come out. Now let's work our way backward to say, how are we going to accomplish that? What needs to be done in grammar school? What needs to be done in K, pre-K, so that we can accomplish this? So for our school, let me just give you a snapshot. When we started looking at our ideal graduate, I didn't create it. Our founders and our board really did a marvelous job doing this before I even came to the school. But we had said we want our graduates to be known for four areas: their character, their knowledge, their discernment, and their communication. Now, when I first looked at it, it wasn't packaged this way. Because what you're doing in your vision is you're fleshing it out. And it's for us, it's a whole one-page document that goes into details. But when I started looking at that and I was trying to communicate this to our community, I was like, they're never going to get all of that. So I had to look at the four broad categories: character, knowledge, discernment, communication. And in my first year's goal was, I'm going to focus on the mission and I'm going to focus on the vision, these four categories. Last year, I started saying, okay, now we can start looking at the rest of the sheet and start fleshing it out as we're talking to our students and fleshing it out and saying, what does that look like? So in each of these areas, we have six or seven statements that unpack it. In our character, for example, we say, what do we mean we want our students to be known by their character? Our graduates, we want them to seek to bear nobly the image of Christ, to seek to serve God and the community humbly with his or her God-given resources, to demonstrate discipline, honor, and integrity in a well-balanced life, to respect proper authority, but yet be willing and capable of leading, to pursue passionately the kingdom of God and not the kingdom of the world, and to authentically live out their faith in practice. And then we keep on going through the rest of them. And if you want either one, a copy of these slides, feel free to email me. I can give you my card. Or I'll be glad to send you this PowerPoint. I'll be glad to send you our ideal graduate, all of those details. But this is how we started unpacking it. And now our students, if you asked our students, what are we trying to accomplish in you? They can not just tell you what our mission is. They can start telling you what our ideal graduate looks like. They know that that we're trying to help them to become known for their character, for their knowledge, for their discernment, for their communication. And we spent a series of combined chapels unpacking just the character side of it. And then we'll keep going through the rest in the coming years. So that's the mission. That's the vision. Let's talk about carrying out the mission for a few minutes. And I need to start with a statement about God's sovereignty and man's responsibility. There is no doubt the full realization that we cannot change the heart of a student. That in God's sovereignty, it's going to have to be a work of the Spirit of God. But at the same time, we can't ignore the fact that there is a human responsibility, that we have a responsibility in the matter. Throughout seminary, throughout Bible college, throughout other areas with my studies, how do you reconcile all the details of God's sovereignty and man's responsibility? I still haven't figured it out, right? But as I study the prophets more and more, there are some clear principles that emerge for me, that there is a huge element of human responsibility. I was looking at Jeremiah 18, and in Jeremiah 18, you have this passage. Remember, Jeremiah goes to the potter's house, and God gives him, you know, takes him down there, and then God starts using that as an illustration. He said, listen, when I give an announcement of judgment against a city or a nation, to destroy it, to obliterate that place, if that people group chooses to repent, then I will relent concerning the announcement of judgment that I gave. And I looked at that, and the more I looked at the prophets, the more I realized, you know what? Prophecy is primarily conditional, not unconditional. In other words, that God makes announcements, and just so you don't think that this is a Dallas Seminary thing only, Richard Pratt, Reformed theologian, great Reformed theologian, says the same thing. That prophecy is designed to call the people back to the covenant. God makes an announcement so that the people will respond properly. And based upon their response, their human responsibility will determine whether or not what he announces to do will come about or not. And that works for blessings too, because he says, if I announce to bless a people and then that people chooses to do evil, then I'll withhold the blessing that I promised. So there's this element of human responsibility in the sovereignty of God. For cross reference, you can look up Micah 3:12, which looks to be which on the surface seems to be an unconditional prophecy that God is going to obliterate Jerusalem. But then 200 years later, in Jeremiah 26, they're trying to figure out what they're going to do with Jeremiah. What are they going to do with him? And the elders stood up and they said, "Hey, remember Micah of Moresheth prophesied this?" And they quote Micah 3:12. And they say, but did God destroy Jerusalem? I said, no. Why? Because Hezekiah led the people in repentance. And God withheld that judgment. So what does that have to do with mission? Well, there is an element. When I look at our mission statement and I see what our goal is, you know, training students to impact their culture for Christ, we have a huge responsibility in that matter. Day in and day out, teachers, I mean, it's the little conversations that happen every day. It's the, this is why you stay up late at night grading papers. Administration, board, I mean, board, hats off to you. I mean, you guys put in countless hours for free. All right, I always joke with our board members and say I'm going to increase their salary 3 times, multiply by 3 this year, right? Why do you do that? Because you're trying to invest in the next generation. Because you're taking this element of human responsibility and saying, I know to fulfill the Great Commission, God has called me to train students, to train people. And this is why I'm doing it. This is why heads stay up late at night. This is why you go through all the countless hours, all of those issues. It's worth it. We have a responsibility in all that matter. But at the same time, at the end of the day, you know, God is sovereign. There are times that I leave frustrated and when I see this, our students not living up to what we're trying to train them to do. And I've got to say, look, all we can do is do our very best at this matter. We can continuously look at what we're doing, tweak things, but at the end of the day, you know, God is sovereign. And we're going to pray that he does a work in their lives and in their hearts. So as you're carrying out your mission, I just wanted to start there and just say, keep that proper balance. Because on the one hand, you know, you could say, well, I'm just going to do what I'm going to do and let God figure it out and go to that extreme. The other extreme is you can spend so much time trying to do everything that you can do in an unbalanced way and get some imperfect results, and then you end up spiraling downward into depression. Okay. Recognize the balance between God's sovereignty and man's responsibility. So heads of school, let me talk to you for a minute. You've got to own it, and you've got to live it. Be passionate about your mission. Doug Wilson, in his intro to the Seven Laws of Teaching, you know, he talks about one of the four loves of a teacher. And we go through this with our teachers all the time. They have to love the Lord their God with all their heart, soul, and mind. They've got to love their students. And the third one, anybody remember it? No? They have to love their subject in the presence of their students. And I love that. It's not just that you love your subject, but you love your subject in the presence of your students. Because passion overcomes a multitude of pedagogical errors. It does. I will go into a classroom, and sometimes I'll say, yeah, they're not applying that law, that law, that law. But you know what? They're passionate. And because they're passionate, what's going on? The students are fulfilling law number two. They're attending with interest. And when students are attending with interest, they're picking up something. They're learning something in the matter. So heads of school, own it, live it. Be passionate about your mission. And be passionate about your mission in the presence of your community. You live it, you breathe it. Be passionate about it. Because you need to inspire others to share that mission as well. Malfers, in his book, says, passion is the decided difference between ministry mediocrity and ministry excellence. I love that. Passion is the decided difference between ministry mediocrity and ministry excellence. One of the quotes that we heard Truett Cathy say yesterday in the video was that he says, I don't know a whole lot of things about mediocrity, but I know I don't want to be a part of it. Well, how do we rise above mediocrity when it comes to our mission statement? We own it. We live it. We breathe it. We speak it. We become passionate about it. And I'd say a couple of things. If you're finding that you can't become passionate about your mission statement, usually one of two things is wrong with the picture. Either number one, it's a bad mission statement. And that's possible. Right? I've seen some. In classical Christian schools, I've seen some bad mission statements that may have great content, maybe all the right, you know, philosophically I agree with it, but it's just a bad mission statement because it's not memorable, marketable, it's not concise, it's, you know, all of those other issues. So you become passionate about it. So it could be that the mission statement is wrong and needs to be tweaked. Now, as new head of schools, if you're coming in and you find that to be the case, you know, don't plan on changing that year one, right? You know, that wouldn't be wise. Board members, same thing, a lot of board members in here, or if you're starting a new school, take your time to craft a good mission statement. And if you currently have a bad mission statement, then have a plan to revisit it and to tweak it. This is a football, right? At some point, if you have a bad mission statement, it's fundamental, you've got to get your mission statement right. The second thing that could be happening is the problem could be you. We might not be excited about our mission statement because we have an internal problem. And then you've got to get alone with the Lord and figure out why that's the case. Or maybe you just, you know, maybe it's just not a good fit for you in the school. It's okay. If you have a, you know, if your push is differently than the school and the board, and if as a head of school, if you're not united with the board, then you may have to say, look, maybe we need to, maybe I'm not the right fit, or any of those issues, right? All right. So, and then you have to communicate the mission. Externally, you got to communicate it with those that are looking at your school. You got to communicate it with the broader audience. Internally, you've got to constantly communicate your mission in a passionate way. Classical Christian education is an answer to what's going on in our culture today. What you are doing day in and day out in your schools matter. So when you communicate it regularly and communicate it with passion. We'll talk about some practical ways of doing that here shortly, but communicate it, communicate it, communicate it. You can't pound the drum of mission enough. I've got a couple of our teachers here, and they can probably tell you they hear me 100 times a year going through our mission or more, right? I'm always talking about our mission because that's what distinguishes us from other schools. I've been in a couple of schools, two scenarios. One, when I first started teaching, I was in a traditional Christian school that had said a lot of the right things, but what happened in the classrooms, what happened in the hallways, just didn't look Christian. And then later, I became a founding headmaster at a school in Maryland, and then I transitioned to a teaching pastoral role, and while I was in the teaching pastoral role, I had another local pastor call me, and he said, "Hey, look, somebody gave me your name. I just took over pastoring a church, and we have a school, and our school's Christian in name only. We've experienced mission drift. And I was given your name as a potential candidate to try to help us correct it." What we do on a day in and day out basis is valuable. And we've got to communicate that. It's got to be something that's actual and not just aspirational. So what are some keys to success here? The first one, and I would unashamedly say this, is people. Your most important key to success of fulfilling your mission is your people. It's your faculty, your staff, your admin, your board. If you're going to accomplish your mission, it's going to be because all parties are working together. There's no room for fighting between board and head of school. There's no room for fighting between the grammar school and the upper school teachers. There's no room for that. I mean, you can have disagreements in a respectful and winsome manner, but the mission is too important to sacrifice it on the altar of my personal opinion or getting my way. People are your most important asset to fulfilling your mission. And the Chick-fil-A representative yesterday said that, in fact, when they were quoting another Truett Cathy statement, was that a great company is a caring company. And they said yesterday, you got to care for your employees and you care for your guests. Again, Chick-fil-A, again, one of the points that I think we can do is learn from companies that are doing it well. Care for your employees, care for your guests. I think about ISM's principles for two key principles that they talk about is that you're constantly looking at your student learning experience. You want your students to have an excellent learning experience day in and day out of your schools. You want your students to come away with excellent classical Christian learning experiences day in and day out. The number one influencer of your students' learning experience is your faculty culture. Your faculty culture. You know, your people are critical. They're professionals within their field. You love on them, right? You care for them. You listen to them in a collaborative way. Doesn't mean you give in to everything that they do. You can't do that. Sometimes when the rubber hits the road, you're the one making the decision, heads of school, boards, you're talking about big 30,000 foot level items, and you have to make some hard decisions. At the end of the day, you may say, no, it just doesn't fit with what we're going to do. But you have to be approachable. You got to be willing to listen. Your teachers need to know that you care about them. One of the struggles that I found that I fail in this area, what I find is that our teachers, one of the ways that our teachers feel like I care about them is when I show up in their classroom. I've got this goal, and I still fail in it every year, to try to be in the classrooms 25% of the time at least. Right? They often say 25 to 50% is kind of best practices. I struggle to do that every year. So even this summer, as I'm thinking about next year, one of my goals is to be in the classrooms more. I've got to. Because that's the way our faculty recognizes that we value them. And when you're in it, don't just find out what they're doing wrong. And highlight what they're doing wrong. Focus on what they're doing right. I had a mentor that told me one time that people are more important than the process. Great. Great quote. People are more important than the process. And we have to remind ourselves of that all the time. Your most important key to fulfilling your mission is your people. Which means you gotta get them. You gotta hire the right people. You've got to onboard them properly. You've got to make sure they continue. You've got to keep the mission in front of them so that they're keeping it the main thing. I mean, all of these, you got to train them. You got to bring the right people into your school, the right families. Well, here's another aspect. And interestingly enough, this came up in yesterday's conference too. Now, I created this PowerPoint before yesterday, so I didn't steal it from it. But Chris Darley from Chick-fil-A said this as well. Again, this was the second key point that I pulled away from Andy Stanley years ago. And it was about organizational systems. Moving from thriving to not just surviving. And one of the points is this, that when we think about our systems, systems help create behaviors. Now, Stanley actually says systems create behaviors, and he's right. But there's just something in me that says behaviors are heart issues. So I said systems help create. I just modified it a little bit. But he's right, that when you think about it, to fulfill your mission, you have to have proper systems in place. And you got to think through which ones facilitate the mission and which ones impede the mission. Thinking through your organization, what systems do we have in place? And I'll give you some examples here in a minute. But systems help create behaviors. And as I was thinking, when I was actually, to be honest with you, when I first heard Stanley say that, something in me said, because I've been reading Ted Tripp's books, Shepherding a Child's Heart, and I was like, no, behaviors are symptoms of the heart and all of these matters. But then I walked away, I said, you know what? What do I tell teachers? Every year, especially with new teachers coming in, the routines that you establish in your classroom in the first 2 weeks will make a drastic impact on the behaviors of your students throughout the year. What is that saying? Systems help create behaviors. Yeah, behaviors stem from the heart, and disrespect stems from the heart and all of those issues, but systems can go a long way for producing the right behaviors. The systems, here's another point, especially for new people coming in, but the systems that you inherit, adopt, or create will eventually impact what your faculty, staff, and students do. So ask the question, what kind of system will create that type of behavior? So let me give some samples. a year ago, we had a few teachers that were thinking that had a struggle with some of the students that we let in. They looked fine in the family interview process. The school year began, and it was like, oh my goodness, what happened? and our teachers are like, what are you guys doing? Are you relaxing your admission standards? We're like, no, we're not. We're trying to make it more stringent. And but what we did was first we listened to our faculty. So we wanted to make sure that our faculty heard that we heard their concerns. And then we came up with a new system. So this year, what we did for the admissions, and what we were seeing it especially was in the younger ages, pre-KK coming in, we decided we have to change the system the way it works. So in order for us to accomplish the mission, we need to do something different. So what we did was we said, hey, we're gonna bring in the students, maybe 8 at a time. We're going to have one of our teachers teach them for about an hour so that we can see how they interact amongst a peer of other students. And while that's happening, our grammar school principal is going to be meeting with their parents and talking about parenting tips and how do you shepherd hearts. And that was a systems change in our admissions office, driven by our admissions office, to make sure that we're accomplishing our mission, to make sure that we're partnering with the right families, to make sure we're looking at all of that on the front end. I was at a school on an accreditation visit, Regents up in Nacogdoches, and one thing that was very clear was that they had systems of call-outs, and it was working very well for them. They had these call-outs, and I stole a couple of them. But one of them, leave it, and some of you guys probably already know these, better than you found it. So that's a system. Going through a system of call-outs that where you're going through and training your students in certain character traits or habits, developing habits, are always, when we had a challenge with, and sometimes periodically still have the challenge with, our upper school students and how they brought their backpacks in when they went to lunch and they put it in front of their lockers. It reflected nothing. There was no beauty in it whatsoever. They just started dropping it, right? So when I first looked at it, I said, okay, do we only have to just tell them to start doing it a different way? That's not going to work. You can tell them once, and maybe they'll get it, but you've got to create a new system to help create to make the change. And that system for us in the front end was a couple years ago. I said, okay, I need to assign a faculty member. So when the students are coming through and they're putting their backpacks down, a faculty member is telling them, hey, make sure you put it this way. Make sure it's neat, nice, orderly, until they get into the habit of doing it well. And then it becomes second nature. And I just found out this year we got to go back and revisit that again. So, but those are the, you know, just thinking through what you do on a daily basis and what systems are going to help facilitate your mission. What systems do you have in place to train your students? Right now we're in the process of thinking about how we do chapel. What systems do we have in place that are going to take it from what we say to them applying it? So we have these house chapels once a month where the students are meeting together in their houses, and it's a little bit more small group, small group fleshing out some of the details on a personal level. And as we're talking this year, our houses are getting too big to be able to do that. It's not small group anymore. Now it's a large gathering. So now we got to think through the system of what we're doing to help create the behaviors and to train our students well. So think through your systems, and that goes through all aspects. This is what's great about a conference like this, is you get to talk to other people and see what other schools are doing in their systems processes. All right, one last one. Revisit and reflect. Revisit your mission statement. Revisit your mission, your vision statement regularly. All of our teachers have our portrait of our ideal graduate posted in their rooms, so they're reviewing it regularly. Our grammar school teachers are saying, hey, if our goal is for our students to, in 12th grade, to be known for their communication, what do I need to be doing now in kindergarten and pre-K and first grade to accomplish the ideal graduate? Keeping it in front of them all the time. And not just post it on a wall, but reviewing it and looking at it. And then reflecting. You know, this summer is a great opportunity to take account of how you did this past year. How did you do with your mission? Take your mission statement out. Say, this is our mission. You know, what areas did we succeed as a school? What areas did we fail? Some more tips and practical ideas. Of course, I'd say learn from other organizations, not just schools, that do it well. So, a couple years ago, my wife and I took, we were at Disney, and we took the behind-the-scenes tour at Magic Kingdom, the one that kind of takes you underground, and you get to see the tunnels and everything else. And I was struck by a couple of things in that process. Just the thought process of how they go about fulfilling their mission all the time. I think their mission is to make people happy. I think that's what it was. But they do pretty well in that, right? but as we're going through the tour, and this kind of talks into this next part of spatial studies. I found out, and they were talking about how you go from one area of the park to another section of the park and everything changes. The floor, the concrete that you're walking on changes. The color of the trash cans change. Because what they're trying to do is to give a spatial recognition that you're leaving from this part of the park into Pandora in Animal's Kingdom. So the whole flooring changes when you enter in this new section. Everything changes. So learn from other organizations that do it well. When we were going through the company areas, I was taking pictures of posters that they had hanging that were reinforcing their mission. So we even did this. We have three quads. We have an outdoor classroom, we have a south quad, an east quad, and a north quad. And I wanted to make sure that internally we started communicating key principles of who we're about as a school. So in the south quad, in the south quad, I think it's the Trivium, right? So here's the stages of the Trivium. So one banner in the south quad says the Trivium. The next banner along the line says grammar. The next one says logic. The next one says rhetoric. We're reinforcing to our students and reinforcing to our community, reinforcing to the parent that's coming by and visiting our area. These are all talking points. talking points for our teachers to have with their students. Look, this is what we're about. In sixth grade, you're getting ready to move over to the logic stage. In the East Quad, we talk about here's our mission statement. And we've taken that mission statement and broken it down into four different banners, taking apart each part of the mission statement. And then in the North Quad, where most of our seniors, our upperclassmen are meeting, we had the four characteristics of an ideal graduate posted in that area. We're constantly trying to think through, I picked all that up, I stole it from Disney, right? I was there and I said, that's a great idea. And I'm constantly trying to think through how are other ways, that even spatially, that we can accomplish our mission. Spatial studies is an area where my dissertation is. But Churchill has this great statement. He says, we shape our buildings, thereafter they shape us. Right? After the Commons was destroyed in the bombing, they wanted to reorganize the shape of the House of Commons. And he said, no. We shaped our buildings, but now that structure has helped us shape who we became as a nation. That's true. Think through the spatial organization of what you do, and how does your allocation of space contribute to your mission, to accomplish your mission? And some other practical examples. We want our students to be known for knowledge, for example. And one of the things that I was concerned about was we have all of these great chants and songs and key things that our grammar school are learning. And my fear was, are they retaining it all? And before I had come to the school, they used to do a process called memory period. Before chapel, the third through sixth graders would all get together and they would periodically throughout the year, they'd pick different things that they've learned. And they would rehearse them and memorize them and go through all of these chants again. Even if the third graders hadn't had the sixth grade ones yet or the fifth grade ones yet, they would still go through it. So when I heard about this, I heard about it from several of our parents and said, what happened to memory period? That's the reason why we're here. We visited one time, we saw what was happening at memory period, and we were so impressed. So we said, we need to do memory period again because it helps us to accomplish our ideal graduate. It's reiterating some of the key principles that they had been learning. Prior to, we have students that show up in our pavilion before school. And now, prior to them being dismissed, we line them up in an orderly fashion. We have a system in place to start them off and on their day right in an orderly fashion. Just thinking through some key aspects of fulfilling your mission. Faculty meetings, try to intertwine your mission constantly in them. Chapel, same thing. Back to school nights, your vision nights, remember what he said, right? Start it every season as if it was a clean slate. This is a football. Start with your fundamentals. Every year, I'll talk about our mission. Every year, I'll talk about our vision in our back to school night. Our valedictorian and our salutatorian speeches. I meet with those students that are presenting them, and I say, hey, look, you have some great, tremendous freedom of what you're going to present in this thing, but I want between the two of you, I want one of you guys to be talking about our mission, and I want somebody to be talking about our school motto, right? So at some point, we're reinforcing that to the broader community and to a whole, because this is who we are. Lots of options there, but fulfill your mission. Let me talk about this before we conclude. So what challenges the mission? I'd say the key challenge for fulfilling your mission is to remain focused on the mission. To keep the main thing the main thing. That is the biggest challenge to fulfilling a mission, in my opinion. There's going to be all types of things that come your way. Remember, if your mission is rooted in the Great Commission, you're going to have an enemy that doesn't want you to fulfill it. There's going to be tests. There's going to be temptations. There's going to be all types of things that are going to tempt you to stray or to distract you from your mission. Don't give into it. Right? The world, we're struggling. Social media, that's a big issue. How are we training students to impact their culture for Christ? Where we're getting constant bombardment. You know, Chuck Swindoll said this once. He said, "The church can seldom resurrect what the home puts to death." Great quote. Now, schools, here's the reality. We have a little bit better chance of succeeding in a classical Christian school because the church has them for 3 to 4 hours a week. We've got them for 7 hours a day. So when we partner with the right parents, it's even better. But we can, you know, when we come through, we can combat some of what's going on with the social world. And if we can get our parents to get together on the same page, that's going to help us succeed. Parents are changing. Millennial parents are different. They take more time. They're asking more questions. Some of them have, you know, we're finding a lot of our millennial parents love what we're doing. They just don't know how to do it. So it takes more training. You know, we've got to spend more time investing in training our students. There's lack of systems that can challenge the mission. There's burnt out teachers and faculty and staff and admin. There's always the tyranny of the urgent. But the main challenge is keeping the main thing the main thing. So the mission statement, it's the fundamentals. This is a football. It's the mission statement. The mission statement is your football of your Christian school. Be passionate about it. Own it. Live it. Breathe it. And live it out. We've got a couple of minutes left. Is any questions that I might be able to take on, or anybody have any insight that they want to share? I'm not the end all to be all to all truth. I'm sure many of you are doing great things. Any questions? Yes. Yeah, that's a great question. So now the school that I'm currently at is not affiliated with the church, but in my two previous schools we were just very clear, you know, this is who we are with people coming in, because we had a good amount that were coming from the church, but by and large, more of them were coming from outside of the church instead. So you know, I thought it was important then not to hold any punches. This is who we are. This is our statement of faith. We are the one church. The one was connected to a Baptist church, and we said this was our statement of faith. It's very Protestant in nature. We do allow people from other denominations to come in, but this is who we are. And that's, you know, there's some tricky areas that come into play there. But I would say making sure that your school is in alignment with the church, and then when your community comes in, you know, you have your core essentials that you have to hold on to, and maybe there's some other areas that as a church you're willing to say, hey, you know, this is our core doctrinal statement, and everybody, the school has to be pushing it, and these other secondary doctrines push them back to their parents, and that's what we do at our non-church oriented, non-denominational school now. So yes. Oh, yeah. So, how do we in the West? It's the parking lot. So what we did was, again, in the one we just talked about the classical aspect, and then in the other we talk about what the actual mission statement is, and in the other it's the ideal graduate. So we just try to communicate that throughout each of them. But yeah, and. We have, again, it's an outdoor community, so we're constantly walking on decks, and but yeah, that's what we do. Yeah. So I think, you know, where does it come from? So I'll be honest and say it's more of an organizational modern development. I don't when I look at the scriptures, the closest thing to a mission statement that I see is a Great Commission. But so I wouldn't say it's biblical, you have to have a mission statement. But at the same time, I mean, what I'm seeing is, you know, a slogan helps give some key characteristics, maybe a motto. It's definitely internalized, and but it's not broad enough to encompass what you are. Your mission is really driven at, why do you exist? What is your purpose? And that's, you know, that's what your mission statement is going to answer. What is the purpose for our existence as a school? And then your three to four paragraph one sounds more like, you know, again, that's your fleshing out of what your mission looks like fulfilled. So, yeah. All right. I think we've got 30 seconds if anybody has one last question. All right. Well, thanks for coming. I hope this was a blessing. If you want a copy of it, feel free to come get it from me. Thank you.